so wonderful to have talented people in our midst, you know, our members who can sing and play and all of that. So thank you, Norm. And as always, let's give our trio the dynamic R, Rudy Roderick and Rodney. Yes, thank you so much for that. Well, good morning, everyone. Oh, that feels good. I think I've done well to get you trained up. That's good. This is a blessed, wonderful day. I'm reading from my script, and it says here, welcome to the day of your divine appointment. Know that you are in the right place at the right time. Even those of you wonderful souls who are viewing with us at home or wherever you're viewing, you're in your right place at the right time, doing the right thing. And so we acknowledge you, we welcome you also energetically into this place. And we're grateful and thankful that you've taken the time to spend a few moments on a Sunday morning gathering and worshiping with us. So welcome to you all as well. But let's take a moment to bring the vibrations to our world, because it's not just our country, but there's upheaval and, you know, dissension in the world itself. And some of it we are actually causing. So this is what the great invocation says. And just open your heart and listen. And, you know, after each one, you can affirm in your own way, yes, yes, yes. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. Yes. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May love increase on earth. Yes. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all human will, the purpose which the masters know and serve. Yes. From the center, which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Yes. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Yes. And so it is. Amen. Sometimes we must speak a thing into being, right? We have that power to utter something and cause the utterance of which we speak to vibrate throughout the universe and then find a corresponding vibration that will return to us. So it feels as if miraculously we're speaking and things happen. I think it was Louise Hay who said, pray and things happen. And they do. They do. So let us not forget to maybe, you know, do our part and speak the truth that we know and affirm it loud and clear so that our heart and our intention and our vibration and our light moves forth from within us and taps that corresponding energy and returns to us. Not just dull, but it returns to us full. What does the Bible say? When you give, you receive, and it's going to be what? Pressed down, shaken together, running over. That's what I like about the universe. You put something out and you might get a little bit more than you put out. Call that grace or whatever you want. So always seek, how can I put forth more good? How can I put forth more light? Right? Because light will return, good will return, and not just return, but it will magnify. Magnify. So thank you for the work. Standing up and saying you're going to stand in the gap and do the work for those who might not know that work is needed. So I want to just say, how's everybody here doing today? Good, great, wonderful. And I hope you're doing well at home as well. I know that some people may have been a little shocked last week with my announcement last Sunday. And I also know that there were others who did not know because we had some type of technical difficulties with the recording. And I had one woman tell me she tried to log in and it kept taking her to a Michelle Obama speech. And she kept saying, what? No, wait, no, I want Reverend Silver. And she'd try. And then finally, you know, she kind of gave up. And others told me that they weren't able to get in at all. And some people got in the middle of the talk. So it was a little confusion. And so some people I know were not made aware until the later time or a later date. And I know that the energy may be sitting in your hearts and minds and you're processing it because I'm processing it. It takes a while. But, you know, I know this, that we're going to continue to affirm that divine order, right, is established right here and right now. We are going to affirm that right now this wonderful church is moving towards its next level of greatness. And we want to know and we want to hold that the right and perfect minister is winging their way to you, to this church, right now by divine design and in divine time. We can't beat those two things. Divine design and in what? Divine time. So we don't have any fear or anything of that because we're going to be fine. You will be fine. You know, because this is a divine thing that's happening. And we have to learn how to trust the process and trust in God. And yes, this will be a transition for you as a church, but also for me. You know, I was just sharing with Gwen and Stephanie, and they would say, would you be able to come back and worship? And I said, actually, no. So this is another level of transition because our rules of ethics state that once a minister leaves, they are not able to come back and worship or be a part or be a member and all of that. And so that's the hard part for me, is not being able to see your beautiful faces whenever I want to. That means we'll all have to take time and have lunch, and then I'm going to be so busy because I'm going to have lunch with you and you and you and you and you, right? I'm going to be more busy than ever before so I can connect. But it's a part of the divine design, and it's done so that whatever minister comes in, you want them to come in and be able to establish their ministry. And if I'm sitting up here in the pew looking or whatever, you know, that's not going to work well for them. So we give the minister coming in time to establish themselves and to meet you and to become your minister and to open their hearts to you and you to get to know them. I don't need to be the third wheel in the, you know, spoke in the wheel or however that goes, because this is going to mess things up. So it will be a transition for me, you know. And somebody said, well, where are you going to worship? I don't know. But we say all the time, wherever I am, God is. So wherever I am, I'm going to be worshiping, and I will be all right. It is a transition. And speaking of transitions, I want to share this because it touches my heart deeply. It touches my heart because to be able to have to tell you that one of our longtime congregants, current board member, Usher Supreme, Miss Albertina Lane, has made her transition and on Friday. And Albertina was one of the first people I met when I came into this church over on A Street. And we've been friends. That's my sister friend, my sister girl, you know, dedicated truth student, longtime truth student. But her journey is in the right and perfect time for her soul and spirit. And so I know that she's experiencing great, great peace at this point. And we want to hold her as she travels onward and upward, because life is about what? Transitions, not just from life to death to life again, but in everything. And so we want to bless her and her ongoing. We want to bless those that love her, her family, friends. You know, we want to hold them in prayer and ourselves as well. I was just telling somebody, this is my third good friend in the last few years that I have you know, I don't want to say lost, but have transitioned and caused a hole in my spirit. We had Reverend Charlotte. I don't know if you remember Reverend Charlotte. That was my go-to sister. That's what we called her, my go-to sister. And she was my Reverend in a sense, Cynthia Henderson, who was also one of the souls that I first met when I came into this ministry, and now Albertina. But it is what? It's filled with transitions, not just death, but life itself is made up of a series of transitions, changes that take place. And I'm thinking, what is it about transition, especially if it's the loss of a loved one, or maybe it's about loss of something that we valued, a position or a circumstance or a situation that we held dear and it's not there anymore, that these kinds of things seem to help us to experience a level of angst or pain or suffering or regret or wishing it weren't so or whatever. And I think that's because for the most part is that we have a tendency to see transition as a loss. You know, we see it as a loss, even if it's a good transition. Even if, you know, let's say we're moving from one, we have to give up one position in life that's good, but in order to get a better position or a greater position. But it's like we still have to leave something behind in order to receive and get the something new. And so sometimes that causes us a little angst. Yeah, I know it's a wonderful time for me to leave and to work on my health and to do some things, but I know it's going to be good, but there's wanting to what? I want to hold back and I'd like to hold on and all of that. No, transition, moving from a position and naming it all good. So sometimes even if we're moving from one good position into a better position, we don't like it. Well, I'll speak for myself. Sometimes it's hard to do, right? But in order to receive the new, sometimes we have to let go of the old. And the second reason that I think that transitions may be difficult for us is that we are attached to things being a particular way, being one way. We are attached to a particular outcome, or we're comfortable, you know, in the position that we're in, even if it's an uncomfortable one. If it's familiar, we say, I'm good, right? This is kind of sticky. It's kind of painful, but I know it. It's good. It's mine. I'm okay. You know, so it's a strange thing. We don't necessarily want to change, but if you are here on this planet, you are going to be forced to do what? Change, like it or not. But I'm into my what ifs time. What if we could detach from the outcome of something? Because sometimes, you know, we get so attached to our vision of an outcome that we limit the possibilities. Because say we're praying for a particular thing, we begin to, and this is a technique that it's okay to do, but you can't let it box you in. We have a prayer, we have a vision, we have a desire, and we begin to what? Name it and flush it out, especially if you're doing something like a vision board. You know, we're told as metaphysicians, we should give it color and texture and name it. And so we do all of that, and we get attached to what? That particular vision. We get attached to it showing up and the outcome of our desires and our prayers being exactly as we have outlined. But God doesn't always work that way. Life doesn't always work that way. So at the same time, while you are, as a metaphysician, you must begin to center your thoughts and your vibration so you're putting it out in terms of what it is that you desire to receive. But know that it's not going to necessarily always come back in the same exact measurement or vision that you have held. It might be something greater because we're talking vibration, right? And so sometimes we don't want to limit ourselves, which is why when we pray, we say, pray this, Lord, what? Or something better. See, we want to constantly give God room to work, to bring us our desires in ways that we haven't even thought of. Jeremiah, the prophet, 29 says this. It says, it's from speaking to Jeremiah, and he says, "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good and not a disaster, to give you a future and a hope." I know the plans. We think we know all the plans, don't we, sometimes? This is what I want, Lord. This the color, this and that. But God is saying, but I know the plans I have for you. I know the good that is possible for you. You don't know the future. You don't know all the possibilities. So come to me and ask, but leave it open and let me do my thing. Right? But we get narrow in our vision sometimes and start to direct God. I want it here. I want it this way. I want them to have these qualities. I want this, that, and the other. But let God do its work. This, Lord, or something better. Leave the door open for the possibilities that we don't know and hold. Right? So pray with clarity. Pray with a vision. But pray that you're also open to the highest and the best that God can bring. Because God can infinitely bring you more than you could infinitely, what does 3:20 say, Ephesians? More than you can infinitely dream of. Far better, far greater than anything you can imagine. God is able to bring that. So we don't want to narrow ourselves and get too tight with, well, it's got to be this way, Lord. No, we don't want to do that. So, what if we could actually detach from our current situations? Oh, no, this is important. This is my current situation. This is the way it is. But what if we could step back from that? What if we could detach from our internal fears and our doubts and our wants and our wishes? What if we could detach from all that and simply be so open, so sure that God is going to guide and direct and lead, that we are open-hearted, that we're not even in our own way? What if we could do that? Because, you know, there can be beauty in detachment if we understand what detachment really is. So naturally, I went to my AI source and decided I was going to look and see what they said about spiritual detachment. I know what it is, but I always like to check, see what they say. So this is what it said when I said, give me the rudiments of the spiritual concept of detachment. And it said, detachment is often misunderstood as being cold or indifferent. And if we're honest, we say whenever you hear the term detachment, you think, well, it's just, I don't care. What happens? That's not it. So it says, detachment is often misunderstood as being cold or indifferent, but in a spiritual context, it is actually just the opposite. But in the spiritual context, it is just the opposite. It is a state of inner freedom where your peace of mind isn't held hostage by external circumstances, people, or outcomes. And so when I read that, I said, I had to write that one time, that actually detachment is a state of inner freedom where your peace of mind isn't held hostage by some external circumstance or people or outcomes. And I love that because I don't know about you, but I've been held hostage in my own mind. Haven't you? Yeah, I've been caught. I've been imprisoned by my own mind. I've been held hostage by my own mind. I've been overtaken, overruled, everything by my own mind, my own thoughts and my own feelings and my own perceptions of what I think is happening or thought was happening. And I've boxed myself in, right? So that I'm thinking, well, detachment gives us space from that. It gives us the ability to maintain our peace of mind. Not that we're not going to care about our situations or care about our circumstances, but we want to be detached so that we can be present to them. You want to detach so that presence can come in the midst of that situation. But when you're flailing about and all held up in your mind, presence, which is the divine, which is God, which is the solutions, guidance, that's nowhere to be found because you caught up, all caught up in your own egoic mind. And when we can detach from that, then we create some type of space, inner space from that. So, and we could all use a little freedom and a little space inwardly, can we not? Yes, I think so. I think everybody, I can, I'm going to speak for you, but I can use some inner space, some breathing room, you know, some time to exhale, so much to take in. I've been, you know, dealing with a whole bunch. I'm looking forward to spiritually exhaling, you know, taking the load off with all the spiritual responsibility that I'm carrying. There'd be a little bit more space for me to go, okay, what do I want to do and what do I need to do today? That's what I said. I'm looking forward to getting up and saying, what do I want to do today? Not what do I have to do, not who am I responsible for, not what calls I need to make, not what this, what that. I need to be able to just breathe and have that inner freedom to be. And to trust that the presence of God will guide me when I'm out of the way, when my ego mind is not all up in there trying to, you know, think I'm the assistant manager of the universe. I got to keep the sun and the stars and everything in heaven and working all right. But when I step from that, I can trust that the presence will handle everything. And so my stepping back is a form of detachment, but not from care or concern, but from my egoic sense of trying to, control it and fix it and do it. No. God already knows everything that we have on our plate. God already knows everything that we need. So it's up to us to kind of catch up a little bit. So I'm saying, you know, what if your freedom or your happiness or your peace or your joy or your contentment wasn't dependent upon some external thing, a circumstance, people, a situation? What if those things were not dependent upon things going right? Because we think if things are going right, then we're all right. But when things go wrong, what happens? We feel wrong. No. What if your internal state had nothing to do with that? What if your internal state of mind was a state of freedom, no matter what, right? What if your internal state of mind was to be happy no matter what? What if, you know, peace that you're seeking is available no matter what? What if those things that you were desiring, they're there no matter what, right? Then we can, if we can understand that it's not dependent upon us or some external, it's there. The peace is there, the happiness is there, the joy is there, the energy is there, the guidance is there, the protection is there, the abundance is there. Everything that we think we're seeking and grasping for, guess what? It is present right here. When we become still enough and out of the way enough to recognize it's here, it will unfold. It will come. Somebody said spiritual detachment is rooted in the realization that everything, your body, your house, your feeling, and even your thoughts is in a state of constant flux. Everything is in flux. Everything is moving. Everything is changing. Even right now, we don't feel it, but we are on a globe that is hurtling and spinning through space. Do you feel it? No. Right? But this earth is turning because we know night turns into day and something's happening. How did that happen? Because we are turning constantly in flux, but we don't feel it. So we think nothing is happening. But everything is happening. Everything is moving. So one of the things that we want to understand that is change is happening no matter what. And for us not to want to cling to a particular situation or a particular circumstance. And we do. We want to cling to that which we know. We want to hold on to everything, especially if it's good. We certainly don't want to let go of our good thing. This is my good thing. We kind of let go of something we don't consider a good thing. We can easily let go of the bad things. But the good things, no. I got to hold on to my good thing. Even if your good thing ain't really good to you, you want to hold on to it because in your head it's your good thing. Right? We want to cling to it. We want to hold on to everything. We want to hold on to that which we know. I was reminded of Mary Magdalene and the resurrection is coming up soon. We'll have Easter. But anyway, Mary Magdalene came to my mind. And this is when Jesus had already been crucified and was put away into the stone. And Mary came the next morning and she was looking for Jesus and she wanted to roll away the stone because she wanted to do some anointing, you know, which is their tradition to anoint the body. And so when she gets there, of course, the stone is what? It's rolled away. And she goes in and she sees two men, two angels. And she begins to cry. And they say to her, woman, why are you crying? Why are you weeping? And she says, well, they've taken away my Lord and I don't know where they've put him. Right? And at that moment, Jesus is standing before her. But she doesn't recognize him. Right? And so she thinks, it says, he's the gardener. Now, this is someone who she was devoted to. See, Mary, there are several Marys in the scriptures. And not only does Mary mean purity, whatever, but Mary Magdalene signifies devotion, extreme love, commitment, you know, attachment. And she was devoted to serving teacher, one of Jesus, one of the women that traveled with him and made sure he was okay, loved him, knew him, was familiar with him. But in that moment, she didn't what? She didn't even recognize him. Because what? He had changed his position. He had changed his countenance, moving from that state of being that physical being into being a spiritual being. He was putting on the spiritual countenance of who he was. So she goes, you know, to him, well, do you know where he is? If you've known where he is, you can tell me and I'll go and get him. And then finally, Jesus just goes, Mary. I love that. Like, Mary. Like, are you kidding me? You've been with me all this time. And the moment he says, Mary, boom, her eyes are open and she's like, oh, my gosh. And he says, we can image this from his response. He says to her, do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father, your Father, my God, your God. So we can only assume that Mary was getting ready to give him, you know, a bear hug or whatever, or cling to, but she was going to cling to the old image of who, her old perception of what she was in, you know, in love with and dedicated to and whatever. And he's like, don't cling to that. That's not my new identity. I'm moving into a new being. I'm moving into a new expression of life. And I haven't ascended. I'm not quite there, but I'm in process. Don't cling to me. Now, I love that because there are things that we have been dedicated to or whatever. We want to cling to it. And if a new vision is trying to happen, we can't let go sometimes of the old vision. You know, when you've changed, I don't know if you've ever met people that maybe you went to high school with or you went to elementary school and they were maybe some goofy, doofy person or whatever. And you see them 20 years later and they are looking good, sharp, and clear. And you're like, what? Junebug, is that you? But wait a minute, the Junebug I know, you know, was kind of doofy and whatever, and Junebug's looking good. But it was hard to see him in his what? New state of being. And so we want to relate to people as they used to be, which is sometimes we think, oh, people don't change, but people do change. And sometimes we need to give them the opportunity to show us who they are in this state of being and not hold them to how they were before. And we do that, right? This is how you showed up before, so I don't trust you. Well, maybe they matured a little bit. Maybe they've become different. Maybe life has taught them a few things. And now they have greater understanding, so they're manifesting in a different way. But we've got to be able to give each other room to do what? Change, unfold, grow, you know, and see them in a positive light. I laughed, my brother and I, my oldest brother is 13 months older than I am, and my youngest brother is 13 years younger. But my oldest brother, we pretty much, you know, did everything together because we were only 13 months apart, a year apart, growing up. And I'm just going to admit, you know, growing up, I was a wild woman. I was not to be played with, so we fought all the time. And I used to chase him around the house with a broom or whatever I had my hand on because I was trying to kill him and knock him out or whatever, especially if he ate some of my food or my candy or whatever it was, right? And so we laugh because sometimes he'll see me, you know, and he honors that I'm here now in this position doing this work. But he reminds me, don't get too cute, Becca Beans, because that's what he used to call me, Becca Beans. And that's a whole nother story, because I knew you when, right? I knew you when you used to run around and chase me and all my friends. I knew you when you did this and you did that. And we would laugh about it. But no idea that I would transform into from, you know, a wild little kid to still maybe a wild woman, but but in this role, in this position. And so we have to let, you know, things unfold and evolve in due season and in due time, including ourselves. Because I guarantee you, as long as we're here, there's a new iteration of us that's trying to be born. And we're all going to move from one stage into another. And it just, you know, it's gradual. I had to tell my doctor, I said, you know, I think I finally had to say to myself, I think I'm getting older. Because it was like, no, my knee is hurting me. Stuff is going on. And I'm like, what is this? And where is it coming from? You know, because it's just dawning on me. And for him, it's like, well, yeah, this is the process of, you know, aging. It's like, what? So we're moving into stages. We don't want to cling to the old of who we are. We want to be able to unfold and grow. One of my teachers in India said, we do not fear the unknown. We fear losing the known. You know, we always think, oh, we're afraid of the unknown. No, we also are afraid of losing the known. This is what I know. This is how I've always been. This is the way it's always been. No, losing the known. So sometimes we resist and fight against change because we don't want to lose what we know, what's familiar. Or maybe we don't want to fail at something. I'm successful right here, right now. I'm good here. I got this mastered. I understand how to do this. Don't come up with something new. Don't add anything new because that might not work. I might not work at it. It might fail. And so we have all this resistance. But failure is a good thing sometimes. Failure is what causes us to leap into growth, right? Failure is what helps us to understand. We now know what doesn't work. We now know, okay, don't do this. I need to do this. So it's not always a bad thing. I had a cup of tea this morning, and let's see if I have it. I drink yogi tea. I drink all kinds of tea, but this morning I wanted a yogi tea with some turmeric in it. And yogi tea has all these little sayings. And so when I got the last little turmeric yogi tea, and I looked at it, and I thought, how appropriate for today's message. And it says, never regret your mistakes. Admire the courage it took to attempt the unknown. So, you know, we're going to fail. But don't focus on the failure. Don't focus on, you know, but I'm good because I tried this like, you know, 1,000 times, but I got it now. Focus on the encouragement or the courage it took for you to do something new, to try something new. And sometimes we have to transcend the known so that we can move into the unknown, and then we have to transcend the unknown by giving up what is known. It's just a process. because potential and growth lies within it all. And the beauty of detachment is that it allows you to be open and receptive to the new or to whatever is presenting itself to you, because life is going to present itself to you in good times and in not so good times, in great ways and what you might deem not so great ways. But what if we could meet everything that life is presenting us from a place of inner poise, from a place of steady consciousness, from a place of awareness, not from the place of drama and resistance and no, like it, don't want it, push it away. But what if we could approach whatever life is presenting to us in a way that we're going to handle it with presence? Because no matter what God is bringing to us, God's presence is always with us. And if we could stop the flailing and get centered to what's being presented, we could handle it with presence, with God, with calmness, with clarity, you know, with consciousness, with choice, as opposed to, you know, reaction and flailing around and all of those things, with resistance or fear or vain imaginings, knee-jerk reactions. What if we could just let all that go? Because detachment allows your ego to calm down. Ego's just calm down, right? And when your ego is calm, when you're out of the way, you then have greater access to the wisdom that is there to actually guide you and to help you make a higher choice so that you're not regretting, you know, things that are happening or wishing it wasn't happening, wasting your energy wishing something didn't happen. If it happened, it happened. Wasting energy trying to wish it didn't happen is not a good use of your time or your energy. But yet we do it, do we not? Oh, my God, why did I do that? Why did I? You did it and you said it. Understand the why, but once you get the lesson or whatever, move on. Accept that. Make another choice, but you must accept that. So this is what I think about. How do we move beyond our storylines, our perceptions, our views? But we've got to be freed up. So someone said that our suffering comes from trying to force the world to align to our preference. I would really prefer that I would be rich and, you know, but the world is not aligning for that right now, so that's okay. And then he said, so it says this, our suffering, much of our suffering, comes from trying to force the world to align with our preferences. Detachment is the practice of radical acceptance. You learn to observe your life as a witness rather than being swept up by the drama. And this is what mindfulness teaches you. This is what, you know, I went to study when I was going to India, and this is what the venerable monks who came by were doing. They were mindfulness. Look at the drama. It doesn't mean you're going to be drama-free. Drama's going to come. But you learn to witness it as opposed to getting swept up in it, right? So, and it says, instead of a knee-jerk emotional reaction to a problem, detachment provides a buffer zone where you can choose a calm, conscious response. If you're not in the drama and you can step back and witness what's happening, even for a moment, that gives you enough space to maybe make a choice, right? So it's practicing, how can I witness this? Then unconsciously engaging, reacting, and all of that. Let me see if I can detach for a minute, step back for a minute, get into my witnessing mode, get into my witnessing. Let me see what's going on. Let me see what's happening while being, you know, not in the story, not actively participating as the character in the story, but let me sit back and watch what's taking place. Because that little stepping back and detaching and watching and noticing is what gives you the space to heal, the space to transform, the space to choose a higher way, a higher path. So detachment doesn't mean that you don't care, or detachment doesn't mean that, you know, you shouldn't show love. Because these are some of the things that we think. You know, if I'm detached, I'm not going to show love. I want to show love. Yes, show love. But not the clinging love, right? Mary could show love, but Jesus was like, no, 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 don't bring that clinginess over here. Bring the devotion and the compassion and the care, but not the clinginess, you know? So you can still love. It doesn't mean that you don't act. People think, oh, I've detached, I'm indifferent, I don't act. You better act, but you're not acting from the consciousness of the problem, right? What do they say, that you can't solve a problem on the same level of the consciousness that created the problem? You can't do it, so you got to step back. You're detached from that, and then you act from that place and that space so that your actions are going to be guided by something higher. You'll have an opportunity to handle that situation in a deeper way. So higher choices. This is the path that we're on. I wrote a few things about attachment here. One of the things I says, attachment says, I need you to make me feel whole. Detachment says, I am whole and I celebrate your existence. I am whole and I love you, but you don't make me whole. I am whole. And sometimes we think, oh, my partner, my spouse, my family. No. Or attachment says, you know, I am a failure. Oh, my God, I'm a failure. Detachment says, I experienced a setback. Right? It's separation of the identity of that situation. I'm not a failure. I experienced a setback. That's the detachment. You recognize it, but you're not attached to this being your identity and your nature. You know, part of the things as I'm going through my process is like, wow, 40 years of being an ordained minister. Wow, when I step away, whoa, my attachment is to that identity because that's all I've been doing and knowing for 40 years. Wow, what will I be? What will I do? What? And detachment says, I am who I am. All the experience doesn't fade away. I'm beyond that. I'm beyond that title. I'm beyond this position. I'm beyond, the soul of me is beyond all of that, and I'm okay. See, so it's not detachment that I'm not caring, but it's detachment that allows me to unfold in a new way, taking on a new identity, you know? Wow, who knows what else will be there for me? So it's a time for you to look at, what are you attached to? And what is it that you think you can't do without? Because when we fall into that place where we think we can't do without, that's when the universe says, I'm going to show you. Boom. And that which you thought can be taken away. When I lived in Syracuse, before I answered the call to enter into ministry, I was saying, well, I can't leave this. I can't do that. And one by one, Spirit stripped it all away until there was nothing else that I could say that I can't do this or leave this because, you know, there was no other choice. Spirit said, oh, you think you can't go into ministry because you don't want to leave your good friends? Boom, I'm going to have them all move back down to New York City. Now what you going to do? Oh, well, I can't leave this because I got my... No, you're not going to have that. Boom, everything that I thought, Spirit stripped it away. And then it was like, okay, let me just deal with this answering this call. Whatever it is, let me leave the known and let me jump into the unknown, because my fear was a little bit about the unknown, but it was more about leaving what I thought I had, what I thought I knew, what I was attached to, what was me, you know, boom, gone. So we have to think, what are you attached to? What do you think you can't do without? Recognize if you're attached to something, enjoy it, acknowledge it, you know, appreciate it, be thankful for it, and then be willing to let it go. That's, you know, that's your signal that you are maturing spiritually. Enjoy it. Appreciate it. Relish it. Cherish it. And be willing to let it go. Because something else will take its place for you to enjoy and to relish. Because that's the way life works. Greater good is always on the horizon for us. God's blessing is always enough for us. We're always being led to our highest good. We just have to sometimes let go what we think is for our betterment and trust the process. Trust God, because God already knows it's going to be good. Yes? Yes. Amen. 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 Thank you. Amen. Amen.